Hey, this is Amanda, women's health dietitian.
And I'm Emily, nutritional therapy practitioner.
And this is the Are You Menstrual podcast, where we help you navigate the confusing world of women's hormones and teach you how to have healthy periods.
Each week, we will be diving into a different topic on women's health and sharing our perspective using nutrition, female physiology, and metabolic health.
Our goal is to help you wade through conflicting health information and empower you on your healing journey.
We hope you enjoy it. So far on the podcast, we have discussed a wide variety of topics spanning women's health and hormones, from mineral balance and metabolic health to PCOS and menopause. But one area that we have yet to cover is birth control, which we realize is hugely important to most women in their childbearing years. A whopping 80% of women will take the pill at some point in their lifetime, and for that reason, we didn't want to go any longer on the show without speaking about it. So in this episode, we're going to be covering what you need to know about hormonal birth control specifically, including the different types, how hormonal birth control works to prevent pregnancy, and the specific impact each type can have on the female body.
And this is something that's had a huge impact on myself personally. It's hormonal birth control, particularly the pills, a really big part of my hormone healing journey. It's what kind of sparked my whole interest in this world, because I came off the pill and was just a complete mess. Didn't get my period. My hair was falling out. I had acne. I was diagnosed with PCOS, and no one could help me. So it really kind of sparked my entire interest in switching my career path to women's health. And it's a huge part of the majority of the clients that I work with. Like, most women that I work with have been on some type of hormonal birth control, and I don't want anyone to ever feel bad about taking whatever form of birth control it is that has worked for you in the past, or even that you might be taking right now. I took the pill for 7 years and then I had a copper IUD for 7 years, and I don't regret it. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I'm like, I wish I didn't do that, because it took me a really long time to get rid of estrogen dominance. But I think you kind of have to do the best you can with what you have. And that's why we like to talk about topics like this. And we're going to have another podcast on fertility awareness method with my friend Nina. You know, it's hormonal birth control is important to have access to. It helps us avoid pregnancy. Like, for me, I was in college and it let me finish college, start my career without having a baby, which was important to me at that time. So I've definitely since adapted and successfully used the fertility awareness method as my form of birth control. We'll talk about that more in the next episode. The goal of today is really to just go into how different types of hormonal birth control work, because I don't think this is made clear when we talk to our doctor. I definitely had a very big lack of informed consent, and then possible side effects, because I think one of the big reasons I came off the pill was because I was dealing with feeling like I was like more depressed than normal. I didn't feel like myself, and I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. And I dealt with it for way too long. So it's one of those things where it's like, it's important to know what the side effects are, because it just could mean that that's not the best form of birth control for you right now.
So we are going to talk about the different types. But before that, let's just kind of cover how hormonal birth control in general works to prevent pregnancy. And it does that by putting synthetic hormones into the body, which are very different from our natural hormones, to shut down your natural hormone production and stop ovulation. So just as a small recap, ovulation is when one of our ovaries releases an egg, and it's the only time during our cycle that we can get pregnant, with the exception of the 5 days leading up to this. So those 5 days with the ovulation day are known as your fertile days. And that's because sperm can survive that long in the female body. So anytime from, 5 days pre-ovulation all the way up until the day you ovulate, you are potentially fertile, which means if you have sex that day or on one of those days, you can get pregnant. So that's just kind of a summary of how ovulation works. But when you're on the pill, you have no sex hormones of your own. So all of those beautiful, helpful hormones that lead up to ovulation are not there. And instead, you have steroid drugs given to you as a kind of quote unquote hormone replacement. So let me kind of repeat that, okay? So, because I really want you to understand what the pill does. Basically, the pill shuts down your body's natural process of producing hormones and replaces those helpful hormones with contraceptive drugs that do not actually have the same molecular structures or provide the same benefits as real hormones. These hormones trick your body into thinking it's already pregnant. And I think it's really important to say that Dr. Laura Bryden, who I am a big fan of, she puts it as kind of like a quote unquote chemical menopause that your body is going through when you're on the birth control pill or any form of hormonal birth control, most forms. We'll talk about the different forms in a bit. Certain types of hormonal birth control don't actually directly suppress ovulation, but they do tend to indirectly suppress it. And as I said, we'll get into kind of the different nuances of all of the types in a second.
So why do we want to avoid suppressing ovulation? That's really how we make progesterone, right? Ovulation is the star of our menstrual cycle. You don't technically need to bleed every month. I disagree with that. A lot of people say that you don't need to bleed every month, but you do need to ovulate. But I do think you need to bleed because it's the only way you can get rid of iron, right? And if you don't know the concerns with iron, definitely check out our copper and iron episode. But you don't, you're not going to have those hormonal shifts that keep us, you know, healthy, thriving, feeling good. Progesterone is really what balances out that estrogen, and it's very metabolically supportive. So when we're not getting that chance to ovulate and make progesterone to balance out estrogen and feel good and have good moods, good energy, good recovery, then we're in this place where we're not quite as balanced. We can be a lot more symptomatic. Ovulation is really key. I do think it's important for long-term health for women. You want to be making your own hormones for as long as you can, and you want to ovulate. When we don't, that's not how our bodies are designed to live. When we use hormonal birth control to prevent pregnancy, like, that's one thing. I think when you're using it for symptoms and certain conditions, that's not the best way. That's not what it's designed for. It's designed to stop ovulation so that women can't get pregnant. Most women are not using it for that. They're using it for other menstrual issues, period pain, heavy periods, PCOS, acne, amenorrhea. You're often the option, endometriosis, another big one, you're told to take the pill. And the thing to know if you've been prescribed the pill or any other form of hormonal birth control for one or more of these hormonal issues is that that birth control isn't going to fix those problems, right? It's a Band-Aid. And when it's removed and you stop taking that form of birth control, all those symptoms are going to come back, which is what my experience was.
Right. And I actually had a very similar experience, Amanda. So I never was given the pill for preventing pregnancy. It was always about other things. For example, the first time I was on the pill, I was 16 years old. I had terrible acne and I was put on Accutane. So the pill was a way to prevent pregnancy. So I guess I was using the pill to prevent pregnancy, even though I wasn't sexually active. You have to do that in order to take Accutane. And I'm sure many of women have had to take Accutane or are very familiar with this or wanted to take Accutane because that was a big reason for getting on the pill. And I didn't know any better at 16. So of course, I just did what my doctor told me to do. But then the second time I was on the pill was in my early 20s. I think I was probably 22. And I walked into the OB's office. She was a completely new OBGYN that I had never seen before. And she literally, I remember being in the room with her for maybe 5 minutes. She took one look at like my acne. I showed her the hirsutism I was dealing with, so like the unwanted hair growth. And without asking me about anything else, without asking me about my diet, without asking me about my health history, like nothing. It was literally just like she looked at me. She prescribed the pill. And so I kind of had, I didn't feel right about that, like leaving her office, but I didn't know how to advocate for myself. So of course I just, you know, filled the subscription or the prescription and went on my way. And it's funny now because I was on the pill for about a week and I was having terrible digestion. I think for that entire first week that I was on it, I didn't have one bowel movement. And that was, yeah, it was very strange for me. I was like, this is different. This is very off for my body. Like I feel very weird. And so I told my mom, who I was living with at the time, I was like, I'm just going to stop taking this because it's not helping me. It's hurting me. And I literally said that within the week that I started taking it. And my mom got so angry at me. She was like, Emily, you're so stubborn. You just need to listen to your doctor. You keep going back and forth on what you want. And I was just, but I knew my intuition was telling me this is not helping. This is causing more problems. Looking back, because I was having PCOS symptoms, I was prescribed the pill, but I even knew the second I started taking it, this is not the answer. And I didn't even really know. I didn't have any experience in knowing that hormonal birth control would increase my risk for inflammation, especially in the gut, which is what happened, hypothyroidism, which is what I was diagnosed with a couple years later, nutrient depletion, and insulin resistance. And these were all things that I didn't realize I was already struggling with that were just going to be exacerbated by the pill. That's just kind of one example of how you have to get to the root cause of what is making your symptoms happen, and things like PCOS and endometriosis, these hormonal conditions. It's often the sluggish metabolism in the thyroid, like we've talked about many, many times before. Hormonal birth control is not going to help these issues. And in a lot of cases, they end up hurting them, which is why I just think, you know, we're doing this whole episode just about being informed and knowing your options. What exactly is hormonal birth control and what are your options? That's what we're going to talk about next. But just to kind of keep it simple for you, hormonal birth control is any form of birth control that uses synthetic hormones to prevent pregnancy. This is typically referring to things like tablets, patches, and injections. But let's talk about the different types specifically.
So the pill, I think, is the most common. And well, actually, technically, I think the IUD is now, which is wild. But it used to be the pill was definitely the most common. But all types of pills are going to, minus the mini pill, all types of pills are going to work by directly suppressing ovulation. You can definitely get some side effects from that. We're going to go through some of the biggest ones once we kind of go through the different types of hormonal birth control. But when we think the pill, that's kind of like your classic, you suppress ovulation, so you're not cycling. If you're, when you're bleeding, it's just like a withdrawal bleed. It's not because you ovulated. A true period can only happen when we ovulate.
Right. Another option is going to be the NuvaRing, which some of you are probably familiar with. So this is going to contain estrogen plus progestin, and that's a synthetic form of progesterone, similar to the pill, but it does have a higher blood clot risk, which we will talk about later on in the episode.
And then the contraceptive patch, that has synthetic forms of estrogen and progesterone, and it has a pretty high risk for blood clots as well.
The mini pill or the progestin-only pill does not directly suppress ovulation. It works by thinning the uterine lining and impairing cervical fluid to prevent pregnancy. So this indirectly suppresses ovulation in most women. But again, there are many, many side effects to the progestin-only pill, and that includes things like irregular menstrual bleeding, acne, breast tenderness, decreased sex drive, depression, headaches, nausea, and ovarian cysts. Yikes.
And the other types of pills, like the combined pill, that's like it has synthetic estrogen and progestin. That one does directly suppress ovulation. But so I think that can be a little bit confusing. But most people on the mini pill, progestin only ones, are not ovulating. The arm implants are another pretty common one. These are actually progestin only as well. And they can also cause weight gain and excessive bleeding, which is why a lot of women get them removed. I do tend to see a lot of headaches with those as well.
Then there's also the injection. It's commonly known as Depo-Provera. So this is a high dose of progestin, and the high dose suppresses our natural hormone production completely. So we've actually seen the worst side effects from clients who've used this form of birth control: quick and unstoppable weight gain, awful migraines, nausea, and a complete loss of their cycle. This also has an increased breast cancer risk.
Yeah, I think the Depo shot is probably the most severe form of symptoms that I've seen from people as a result of getting that, like no period for years. and you know how they only last for like so long. A lot of people will still have some level of hormones long after. It's just interesting how much that can linger. And I think that is why it has such a strong impact on symptoms. Mirena or the Skyla IUD, these are devices that are inserted into the uterus that give off a small amount of progestin. So the synthetic form of progesterone, very, very different. I think I was even talking to someone the other day, and I was talking about taking progesterone. They're like, oh, like the pill? And I'm like, negative, not even close. Like the progesterone in the pill acts more like an androgen in the body. They're actually very, very different. And so it can sound like, oh, I'm taking progesterone. You're not. It's not even close to that. And if you look at the chemical structures, they're actually very different. The Mirena or the Skyla, these do work similarly to other progestin-only methods. They have similar side effects. They can be pretty symptomatic, but they do prevent pregnancy pretty well. I think they're some of the most effective ones, minus the copper IUD. That's actually like the most effective, but we'll talk about in a different episode because that's not hormonal. They do still indirectly suppress ovulation, but they're mainly preventing pregnancy by thinning the uterine lining and impairing cervical fluid. It's interesting because a lot of women, like after they've had their Mirena for a year, they do tend to ovulate more frequently. So the Mirena is probably the best form of hormonal birth control where you're still going to be able to ovulate. The only issue I have with this for a lot of people is that they're not cycling, like they're not bleeding. When you're not bleeding, you have no way to get rid of that excess iron, and that can lead to a lot of symptoms as well. So once people have this for a year, typically about 85% of the women will ovulate about 3/4 of the year. It's a lot more frequent ovulation than you're going to get from any other birth control methods. Some people have very strong reactions to it. Some people do great. So I think the best birth control methods, the one that, you know, works for you.
You know, we've just listed pretty much all of the options for hormonal birth control, and it can be very daunting to figure out which one is best for you. And I think it's very personal to each woman and just talking to your doctor. We do want to cover the not so great effects of these options, because that's something that, like Amanda said, you don't hear too much from your doctor. I definitely never did. We might sound kind of like Debbie Downers in this episode on these options. I will say that since the Mirena doesn't completely suppress ovulation and you do end up ovulating more frequently afterwards, it is the one that we believe could be the best option for many women. That said, it has been linked to depression and may reduce your ability to handle stress. The one thing that concerns many with this IUD, like Amanda said, is that they no longer get a period. Remember, the period that you get on the pill is what's known as a pill bleed. So it's not an actual period. So that's not really a huge concern. For me, the big one is the depression risk for this one.
Yeah. And it's like, I have a few clients that do choose the Mirena, works for them. It's the only form of birth control that they feel okay on. Maybe they've had difficulty preventing pregnancies in the past. So it's like, that's their chosen method, which is fine. They don't get a cycle, like they're not bleeding ever though. So they donate blood a few times a year. And that is a great way to get rid of some of that excess iron. So that's definitely an option. But it's funny because I'll have some people that are the exact opposite. Like they, as soon as they get the Mirena put in, they feel terrible. So you have to experiment and see what works. I think there's pros and cons of many different types. I think some of the benefits of all the forms, whether it's pill, patch, injection, IUD, is that they do give women the right to birth control and to prevent pregnancy, especially like if, when you're at a young age. And I do think that that's important to have that option. I think there's other ways that I wish we were taught and I wish we learned about our cycle and how our body works at a much younger age. I feel like I didn't learn this stuff till I was like 22. I think I could have, if we were taught from a young age how the body works, I don't think it would be impossible to prevent pregnancies without hormonal use. We can suppress often stressful symptoms of certain conditions like endometriosis or adenomyosis. Like for some women that have endo, birth control, like the pill, is the only thing that's allowing them to stay sane and minimize a lot of those symptoms. It doesn't work for everyone. And there's some research that shows there's a reduced risk of like colorectal, ovarian, and uterine cancers. There's definitely some benefits to hormonal birth control, but there's some downsides as well.
Yeah, I was just going to add, I know someone very close to me actually who started taking birth control pill when she was very young because she had undiagnosed endometriosis, but it was in the form of painful periods. She was literally incapacitated for several days every month, could not go to school, could not do anything productive. Birth control pill actually really helped to take that pain away. It basically shut off her hormones. She wasn't cycling. She wasn't having a period, so she didn't have to deal with that. And it did serve her very well in that regard. But the downside was that she started actually getting really bad migraines after that. And she's been dealing with migraines ever since. It's really unfortunate that you almost have to pick and choose. Like, what would I prefer, right? The debilitating migraines or the debilitating period pain once a month? It is pretty upsetting. I feel like there should be better options, especially for people with endometriosis. And there are. We might have to do an episode on endometriosis in the future because it's a whole thing in and of itself. There's a lot of women struggling with those symptoms of an endo. But let's talk about the cons really quickly. So the cons as we said, is going to be that it stops ovulation and prevents your body from cycling. So as Amanda mentioned, this is very essential for keeping us young and vibrant and healthy overall because of that wonderful cascade of hormones that keep our body functioning correctly. You don't make any of these hormones on your own. So when you're on hormonal birth control, that's not what's happening in your body anymore. And that's a problem because our hormones are protective of our health. And just as an example of this, I know we like to demonize estrogen a lot in the wellness space because of estrogen dominance, which a lot of women are dealing with, where that estrogen is higher in relation to the progesterone. It's actually important to know that estrogen is a really good health-promoting hormone. So it's actually a happiness hormone because it stimulates your mood and your libido and is important for pleasure as well as bone, muscle, brain, heart, and even skin health. So again, we like to, I feel like, talk about the negative sides of too much estrogen a lot, but it's really a good hormone to have in your body. You don't want to be bottomed out on estrogen for sure. Progesterone, on the opposite side, obviously you want these balanced out because progesterone is a calming hormone. And missing out on this one means possible interruptions in things like sleep, muscle building. Not having enough of it can cause an increase in inflammation as well. So those are two cons, is that you don't ovulate and you don't make these incredibly healthy hormones.
And then, of course, you know, the hormones in the pill are synthetic, so they're not the same form as the hormones that we're going to make in our bodies naturally. And this means that they can negatively impact our long-term health, such as an increased risk to stroke and blood clots, and as well as certain cancers, which we're going to talk about a bit more. But while some, it can prevent some cancers, it's also been shown to promote more breast cancer, cervical, liver, and uterine cancers. So luckily, I mean, the risk does reduce when you stop taking that form of birth control. It's still something to keep in mind, you know, and it's something to be aware of. And I would say the other kind of con is a lot of birth controls have iron in them, especially on like the sugar pill days when you see the red-ish pills. Those are iron. And if it has FE in the name, then you know it's going to have iron in it. And a lot of those can have up to 75 milligrams of iron. So that's significant. I think that's why a lot of women have digestive issues. And I have some clients that they forgot to take a pill. So then they doubled up and then they're like in stomach pain all day and like super bloated and crampy. And I'm like, probably because your pills have 75 milligrams of iron in them. Iron accumulation is huge, especially if you have PCOS or endometriosis. Like that's a major concern and something that I would make sure if you are deciding to use the pill and you have any sort of symptoms, like if you went on the pill for something like PCOS, acne, endometriosis, headaches, whatever, make sure your pill doesn't have iron in it at least. So I would say that's kind of like the other con. And then of course, if you're not bleeding, then you have no way that you're getting rid of iron. And women absorb a lot more iron than men because we typically bleed every month. It's way easier for you to accumulate iron in your body when you're on the pill.
That's so interesting. That was one thing that I did not know about the birth control pill was the iron thing. I knew, obviously, if you aren't having a period, I definitely knew that could be unhealthy or potentially dangerous because of the iron buildup, but I did not think about the birth control pill having iron itself. So
yeah, and not all of them do, but a good portion, I think some of the most popular ones do. Hey, Amanda here, just giving you a quick break, hopefully a break for your brain in the middle of this podcast episode, to remind you that if you haven't gone through our free training, Optimizing Hormone Health Through Mineral Balance, we really do recommend starting there. And the main reason for that is because you're going to hear us say things like mineral foundation, having a solid foundation, are you putting the foundations in place? Especially as we get deeper and deeper into different hormonal topics and specific imbalances in the body, the mineral foundation is always going to be so essential. So if you haven't watched the free training, you can find it in our show notes or you can go to hormonehealingrd.com and it's going to be right on that front page there. But we really recommend starting there so that you can understand how is your current mineral status, how do you assess this, and how to get started with all that, just so you can get as much as you possibly can out of the rest of the podcast episodes. But that's it. I hope you enjoy the rest of this episode.
Okay, Okay, so moving on, we do want to cover in more depth the side effects. I know, obviously, we mentioned quite a few of them in the first half of the episode, but we just want to make sure that you know exactly what you're putting in your body and how it may affect you so that if you are currently on the pill or another form of hormonal birth control or considering getting on, you are not going to be totally blindsided by any of these things that could happen, because I feel like you have to make the best decision for yourself. But as long as you know the risks and the way that you might potentially feel, that's going to help you make the best decision and just kind of go into it with more knowledge and education so that you can be informed and make an informed consent.
And not think you're crazy. I think that's like literally all my doctors thought I was insane. And I was like, I can't be the only one dealing with this. And the whole reason that I even figured it out was because I went online and I was like Googling and looked things up, and a ton of other women felt the same way. And then I dove into the whole, what does the pill do to your body? I didn't even know that it suppressed ovulation. I felt so dumb, but I didn't know. I just was taking it because I'm like, well, I don't want to get pregnant. This is seems like my only option. IUDs weren't really big then. I had to beg to get the copper IUD. They were like, no, because I hadn't had a kid yet. So they're like, it's not going to fit. And I'm like, I don't think that's how it works. This isn't to make anyone feel bad. This is just to so that if you do decide to take something, that you understand like, oh, maybe I should try a different type, because I started to notice this. And this actually is a side effect of taking hormonal birth control. It's not meant to like, you know, freak anyone out.
Right. Thank you. You said that way more eloquently than I was trying to. But yeah, so let's just get into a few of them. The first one is definitely relevant to my story, was the abdominal cramps and the bloating. So many women take the pill for PMS symptoms, which is ironic because it turns out that one of the side effects of hormonal birth control is cramps. So if you're someone who gets on the pill or anything else and starts experiencing these cramps, the bloating, the digestive problems, which we'll talk about in a bit, it can definitely be your form of birth control.
Yeah, and I think it's not funny, but it's kind of funny, but like having a low libido from hormonal birth control, it's like, but I'm taking, a lot of women are taking it so that they can have sex and not worry that they're going to get pregnant. But low libido is really common. Same thing. I think it has a lot to do with hormonal birth control can decrease the size of the clitoris. It doesn't make sense in my brain to take something that's going to make your sex life worse and your sex drive lower. The pill has been shown to decrease the size of your clitoris, and that's why some people, when they start taking it, they actually have a harder time achieving an orgasm. A study showed that after 6 months of oral contraceptive use, the frequency of sexual intercourse and orgasms were significantly reduced. Both the IUD and pill reduced the clitoris size. And I'm pretty sure if someone told me this when I first went on, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah. And I also think about this one in terms of, let's just imagine a world in which we had birth control for men. And if a man walked into a doctor's office looking for birth control and then was told this side effect that he might have, you know, a reduction in penis size or just like a reduction in libido, I feel like every single man, 100% of men would walk out of there saying no thanks. But of course, with women, it's almost like, well, that's the burden we take, right? Like we have to prevent pregnancy, so that's what we're going to agree to. And I don't know. I just think that's really unfair.
Well, they did try to make a pill for men.
And didn't it fail?
I think it was 10% of the study group experienced depression, so they decided that it was unethical.
Oh, see, okay, and this one is going to anger a lot of you because our next side effect we're talking about is depression, which I should not be laughing. It's a really big deal. The most common reason for discontinuation of the pill by women is depression. And we actually finally have a large and reputable study on hormonal birth control and depression and mental health. So JAMA, J-A-M-A, published a study titled Association of Hormonal Contraception with Depression that looked at 1 million women ages 15 to 34 for 13 years. And here's some of the findings, which are really surprising. Not surprising, but just really significant. So women who were prescribed the combined pill containing both estrogen and progesterone, and I shouldn't even call it progesterone, it's a synthetic form, progestin, were 23% more likely to be treated with antidepressants. Women prescribed the mini pill, which is progestin only, were 34% more likely to be treated with antidepressants. And this is the saddest part, in my opinion, was that teens were 80% more likely to be treated with antidepressants if using the combined pill and twice as likely if using the mini pill. That's teenagers, y'all. So when I think about this, when I was reading this, my first thought was, I don't have a daughter yet, but I'm about to have a daughter. And let's not even consider yourself for a second. Let's think about, would you want to put your daughter, who may be, you know, a teenager, on something that had that high risk of making her depressed? Like, would you do that? I feel like most people, if they knew this information, it would be an automatic no, we will find a different way. And so it's, my question is, if you wouldn't put your teenage daughter on this, why would you take something like this yourself?
I think it's because women feel like they have no other option. And that's the interesting thing. I was talking to Gemma. She has a podcast. I can't remember the name. I'm going to be on it soon. I did an interview with her. We were talking about birth control, and she teaches fertility awareness. We were talking about the pill, and I was like, if this came out now, like if the pill was like this new form of birth control, I'm pretty sure that people would be like, no, this isn't good enough. And that like, it wouldn't be so, because right now it's so normalized. So it's, I mean, I even remember when I was taking it, I would even forget to tell my doctors because I'm like, isn't everyone on the pill? Like, you know, so it's very normalized. 80% of women will take some form of hormonal birth control in their lifetime. Like, it is very much so ingrained in our society. So I think that we have to make it so that things like fertility awareness and understanding how your body works and that we are only fertile 6 days a month is more normalized versus like men are fertile every single day. So I feel like if anything, they should have to be way more responsible than women for this, because it's like, well, I'm not in my fertile window, so like I'm fine. But what about you? You're always in a fertile window. So it's difficult. I think depression hits really close to home for me because that's the reason why I even started looking into it in the first place. And I hope that if anyone is taking the pill, and I didn't notice it right away either. This was something that kind of, I'm like, oh, like, and I had just started dating my now husband, and he was kind of like, you seem off. Like, is there anything we can do? Like, is it, maybe it's the birth control? And it was kind of like, oh my gosh, maybe it is the birth control, you know? So if he hadn't said that, I don't even know if I would probably take me another few years to figure it out. So if you're struggling, like, please consider talking with your doctor about different alternatives, because it doesn't have to be that way and it might not pop up right away. Some people are very sensitive to the progestins and the synthetic estrogens in birth control. Some people aren't. And it's interesting because a lot of women with endometriosis, there's a much higher chance that they're going to be dealing with anxiety and depression. And typically those are the people that don't do well with progestin birth controls, but that's what they're automatically being prescribed. So another kind of big symptom that we tend to see with hormonal birth control is edema or having some water retention. So if you're taking a type of hormonal birth control that has estrogen in it, this can actually promote fluid retention and cause weight gain and bloating. This is, I think a lot of women see this, especially when they first start taking the pill, if it has estrogen in it or any sort of like estrogen-based birth control. Typically, on average, women are going to gain about 4 to 6 pounds within the first 6 months. And it's just water. It's literally just water retention. It can freak some people out. The mini pill too is associated with the same thing. So I think it just kind of depends on like how you're going to react to it.
Another one that doesn't get talked about much is gallstones. So that's actually a common side effect of hormonal birth control. And they're not really life-threatening, but they are really important. Like, the risk of developing gallstones is 35 to 50% higher in women who take oral contraceptives like the pill compared to women who do not. And this is because estrogen and progesterone increase gallstone formation. But that's just a big deal because you don't want your gallbladder to stop working. Like, that's going to affect so many things like digestion and worse complications down the road. So just something to kind of keep ahead of and be aware of.
Well, a lot of women get their gallbladder removed. I see that all the time. It blows my mind how many women have had their gallbladder removed. And they're so young and healthy otherwise. And all of the women that I know that are my clients, they've had some type of hormonal birth control history that have had their gallbladder removed. And sometimes it's really obvious, like it was like happened around the same time that they started the birth control. Sometimes it's down the road. But yeah, I would say like that's a really big one if you already have digestive issues and if they're being exacerbated by your choice of hormonal birth control, especially if like you're having floating stools or really loose stools, anything, any irregularities in bowel movements, I would want to keep a close eye and make sure that your gallbladder is working. Because once you get that gallbladder removed, I mean, you have to take ox bile for the rest of your life and you need digestive support forever. And if you aren't, a lot of women don't know that. And so then they don't absorb fat soluble vitamins as well. And they develop nutrient deficiencies.
It's become like a really quick and easy solution. Like if you have gallstones, oh, just remove the gallbladder, but it's not a good thing to do. And I think, again, another topic that I don't feel like doctors really give information on is what will happen if you do have your gallbladder removed. Like Amanda just said, like you will need support for the rest of your life to digest those fats.
And then you're all of a sudden you're deficient in vitamin A and you wonder why you have inflammation, you're hypothyroid. You know, vitamin A is so, so important. Same thing with vitamin E and vitamin D. So, and K, like those are all our fat soluble vitamins. And if you don't have bile, then we can't break down and absorb those nutrients.
Okay, another one I kind of mentioned, this one was headaches and migraines. So that this one of the most common side effects of hormonal birth control actually is headaches or migraines. And research has shown that they are more severe while taking oral contraceptives. But you could also see, we also see an increase in migraines with the Depo-Provera shot as well. So either one, if you do find that you are experiencing more headaches or migraines for the first time since starting a form of hormonal birth control, this might be an area where you want to look for a different option because that can be so debilitating in everyday life.
Yeah, I feel like most women kind of know right away if it's going to work for them or not as far as headaches and migraines. Another big one is that increased risk of cancer that we put like under that cons list. And this was one of the biggest reasons I wanted to get off as well. So I'm like dealing with depression. I'm like, I think it's the pill. And then I start researching it and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I was on a combined pill, which meant it had estrogen and progesterone. And so I didn't realize that that increased my breast cancer risk significantly. And I have such significant family history of that, that I was just like, that I can't, I definitely can't take this anymore. I mean, luckily it did make me feel better that when you stop, the risk goes away. But I think that's something that I'm like, that my doctor should have known that. And they should have been like, at least try a progestin only option or something. Like, it definitely was not looked through thoroughly or taken seriously. So if you do have that family health history, just make sure that the type of hormonal birth control that you're choosing, if that's your choice, is appropriate for you. And then, of course, the increased risk of stroke and blood clots. I feel like this one gets the most play. It's like, I feel like they talk about this the most. Oral contraceptives that increase blood clots the most are typically the ones with estrogens in them, but they all technically do. But basically, as that estrogen amount increases, the blood clot risk increases.
I don't know about you, Amanda, but I'm, for some reason, I've never had good circulation. So blood clots scare me. Like I know like in pregnancy, your risk goes up. Like there are a lot of different things where you can see an increased risk after you have surgery. But that was one reason I remember actually, was it someone told me or I read something about blood clots with the birth control? And I was like automatically paranoid because that's just a huge fear of mine is to get a blood clot.
I mean, it's something that I feel like people don't quite, they're like, oh, that wouldn't happen to me. But unfortunately, it does. I can't remember. I listened to a podcast on Nicole Jardim's. She had a dad on whose daughter died of a blood clot from hormonal birth control.
Yes.
And now I think he's in Texas.
I think you're right, actually, because I remember seeing something about this, whether it was an Instagram post or something. But yeah, I remember his story. And it was heartbreaking.
It does happen. It's just good to know, especially it's based on your genetics and stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of figure out if I'm at a higher risk for this, okay, I wouldn't choose this type of hormonal birth control.
Right. And I think that's just another area where you definitely have to be your own health advocate when you step into a doctor's office, because sometimes they just won't consider all of your health history, your family's health history. You really need to know that about yourself in order to kind of put the pieces together to decide what's best for you and the lowest risk. But another side effect is going to be inflammation. So it does hormonal birth control does increase oxidative stress in the body. So this increases your need for antioxidants and it raises inflammation. And you can actually see this increased inflammation by looking at a blood marker. So if you get lab work done, get your C-reactive protein or CRP checked, because that'll kind of tell you where you're at in terms of inflammation in the body. As you know, I mean, inflammation is involved in every chronic disease. So it reduces gut health, it increases the risk of autoimmunity, cancer, and of course, pain. So just not, we don't want to be having chronic inflammation.
And insulin resistance is another one, which always kills me because a lot of women with PCOS are recommended to start taking the pill because if you don't have a regular cycle, they're like, oh, it'll regulate your cycle. It doesn't regulate your cycle because you're not ovulating. So you're already, basically, if you have PCOS, obviously we did a whole two-part series on this. So definitely go listen to those. But we talked about the most in the first episode, how, you know, some women do ovulate every 30 days, you know, like they have 30-day cycles or normal cycles. Some women have less regular cycles, so maybe it's closer to 60 days. Maybe you have no cycle. It's completely unpredictable. There's different kind of spectrums of PCOS and like how irregular ovulation is, but insulin resistance is a huge part of that for most women with PCOS. And so if you're already dealing with insulin resistance and you're not ovulating consistently, it doesn't make any sense in my brain to take a pill that's going to make it so that you definitely don't ovulate and can increase inflammation and increase insulin resistance. There were progestin-only pills or that mini pill that did not impact insulin resistance as much in the studies that I went through. So I would say, like, if you do feel like you're in that boat where you have PCOS, you need some form of hormonal birth control, like you, the FAM, maybe FAM doesn't work for you. You don't know how to use FAM yet. Maybe you've tried the copper IUD and that didn't work for you, or the Mirena, then I would say like the mini pill is going to be the best option for those with PCOS because it's not going to have as big of an impact on insulin.
So low thyroid and testosterone levels is another issue. So birth control or hormonal birth controls increases a protein called sex hormone binding globulin and thyroxine binding.
I just call it SHBG.
Yeah, I probably should have just went there. but it also increases thyroxine binding globulins, which bind to free sex hormones and thyroid hormone. So it actually is a protective mechanism. When you have excess hormones in the body will do this in order to protect you. But there's like a downside to this because this can mean that you're going to have reduced testosterone levels, which, hello, low libido, and you're going to have reduced thyroid hormone levels. So if you already have a sluggish thyroid, this is going to be not so great for you.
And I think that's probably one of the biggest impacts it had on you, other than digestion, was like you were most likely already dealing with thyroid issues. And then the pill probably like pushed it over there. I mean, it can also deplete nutrients, which we're going to talk about in a second. So the main issue with this is that you're often going to be dealing with low sex drive, depression, feeling cold frequently, constipation, brain fog, dry skin, hair loss issues. I have seen that a lot with the pill. So there's a big connection with the pill and thyroid function. It took me forever to increase my testosterone when I came off the pill. I feel like it took me years. Yeah. And it's crazy because it's like, you know, I was young, I was very athletic, and I had a lot of muscle, but my testosterone was so low. But my steroid hormone binding globulin stayed high. It can stay high for years after. It can eventually get better, but it's pretty normal for that number to stay high for a while. And then melasma, that's another really common one, or that hyperpigmentation, like dark spots on the skin. Typically, this is going to be on the face, but it's a very common side effect of hormonal birth control. It also happens to some women during pregnancy because of the changes in hormones. So research on several different types of the pill show that it doesn't matter what kind it is, they can all contribute to that hyperpigmentation in the skin.
Nutrient depletion, we've already mentioned this one, but it does deplete antioxidants, B vitamins, magnesium, selenium, zinc, and vitamin C, which are all super important for overall health.
And I tend to see really high copper on hair mineral tests from people that take the pill. And it's funny because people assume if it's only for women that have the copper IUD, but I see really high levels post-pill, like if women are making that transition to come off, or if they decide to stay on it. So that when it drives up that copper, that means that it's not available for use in your body. And then that's going to impact how much energy you're making, your iron stores, inflammation, blood sugar, so many different parts of our health. So it can deplete nutrients, but it can also create imbalances in certain nutrients in the body too. And then of course, poor gut health. We talked about gallstones and a lot of women having to get their gallbladders removed. It can also impact the balance of bacteria in your gut. So it negatively disrupts the beneficial bacteria. So it's often leading to low levels of good bacteria and higher levels of, it's not necessarily like pathogenic bacteria, but I would say, you know, it can create more imbalance, like dysbiosis in the gut. And often because there's that increase in inflammation, digestive issues, this puts women at an increased risk for autoimmune diseases.
So coming off of that disruption in the gut bacteria, this can actually increase your risk for yeast infections. So if you have that bacteria that's just off because of the birth control, you might see an increase like of yeast infections. Let's say you've never had yeast infections before in your life. If you start seeing them with a pill, that's going to be why, because it does definitely play a role in vaginal bacteria health.
And I think because of the copper too. One of my sisters, she was dealing with really high copper and she chooses to take the pill because it works for her, at least as best it can. And she had crazy high copper. And then she always gets yeast infections when she's on it. And I was kind of, and I knew that from the past when she had taken it, but I like totally forgot. And then when she was older and took it, I was like, wow, this is wild. Like you have no issues. And then you take the pill. And then we did a hair test and her copper was sky high. She still takes it. And we basically just use supplements to keep the copper in balance. But copper is also antifungal. So if your copper is super high or super low, you can't use it. So she does, you know, beef liver, whole food vitamin C, stuff like that. And then just like bacteria support for her gut and it balances out. But that's like a really common one that I didn't realize how severe it was for some women. So that is really what we have to share about hormonal birth control. It's a lot, but I hope that it helps you better understand how the different types work and then possible side effects so that if you are experiencing them, you know that, okay, this could be coming from my birth control choice. We are going to go into a whole episode with Nina Boyce. She's Nourished with Nina on Instagram. And we're going to talk all about fertility awareness method, which is what Emily and I both use. It's not for everyone. It can be nerve-wracking, but I think the more you learn about it, the more you learn that it is effective for birth control, but it also teaches you so much more than that. Like I just think it's a great tool in general for women. But it, hopefully you don't feel like this was too harsh of an episode on hormonal birth control. I know sometimes we have to take it. It feels like it's our only option. But hopefully if you're taking the pill for something other than birth control, this encourages you to consider your other options and help you get to the root.
For sure. I think the pill was definitely revolutionary for women when it was invented. And I think it's done a lot of good. But at the same time, it's 2021. And I think at this point, we deserve a better option. So definitely tune into next week's episode because that is where we will walk you through a possibly, we think, better option.
Thank you for listening to the Are You Menstrual podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider leaving us a review and sharing the podcast with someone you think it will help. If you are new here, we can't recommend enough to start with our mineral imbalance quiz. This is going to give you an idea if you are at low, moderate, or high risk for mineral imbalances. And then, of course, make sure you follow us on Instagram at HormoneHealingRD and consider signing up for our newsletter. If you like nerding out and you are just loving these podcasts, but maybe you're a little bit more visual and you want to see things too, we go into a ton of detail in our weekly newsletter. So we would love to have you join us there. All right. Thank you. And we will see you in the next episode.